This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks. I'm Maya Aides. We're here in the secret bunker lair headquarters of scififorme.com. Today, I'm joined by Cammie Settle.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. And we are, this is our little grim session.
I'm feeling very grim today.
Totally grim. So we're talking basically about season three, but I wanted to touch on very briefly about some of the things that have been carried over from previous seasons into season three. The most notably that I wanted to talk about is our whole royal mystery storyline, which has drug on from season one. They first touched on this in season one, and we saw a lot more of it in season two. And now in season three, it's just like the sort of bastard stepchild. It's there, they keep touching on it, but we're not getting enough information to really make it very interesting. And it's almost like it gets pushed to the back. The only thing that makes it relevant and interesting is that Adeline has the demon baby trying to push its way literally out of her womb.
Right.
Just after 6 months of pregnancy.
Right, which she looks like she's maybe in her third month.
Or third week.
Yeah. The type of woman we love to hate.
Right? Yes, totally. Because by my third week, I looked like I was in my at least third month. So, but the whole thing I don't hate or I'm not envious of is the smearing on of the Hexen Beast cream that makes these really demonic symbols on her belly.
Right.
And now she's going through some agonizing pain and everything. But I was talking to a friend last night, in fact, about Grimm and where it's going and so forth. And she was complaining that she was tired of the royal story, that she didn't care about it anymore. And I started to think about, why is that so? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's happening because it's been such a tease, and it's like a striptease where she is neglected to even take off the first glove.
Right.
And you lose interest.
Sure.
You know, if she's not going to take off anything, who cares?
Yeah, it's unsubstantial teasers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we're losing interest in the storyline because we're not getting enough information. There is so much that's being kept secret that there's nowhere to go with it. And it's been a long, long time coming for any payoff.
Right.
And I'm not sure how they're... I mean, I understand something's going to have to come to a head here pretty soon because Adeline's going to give birth apparently really soon.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'm not really sure how they're going to make the whole connections here between the different factions in the royal family. And I guess I should have... I should have stated at the very first, spoiler alert.
Spoilers.
Sorry if you haven't been following along. I've just now blown basically everything for you. I'm sorry. So Eric Renard, Sean Renard's half-brother, was in theory killed in a car bomb. And I say in theory because we did not see a funeral, we didn't see any kind of a body, we didn't see the charred remains in the car or anything. And Eric is just, I mean, his whole character was about being devious, deceitful, and just he was manipulative and loved playing with and torturing and playing with emotions and torturing those around him. And
so his disappearance is in character with his persona, right?
Yeah.
It's something he would concoct.
I think so, even though it's very apparent, they basically said that Sean Renard had the explosion set up.
Interesting.
He didn't do it himself. His associates did it.
So do you think that the half-brothers are in league with each other?
No.
Okay.
But I wouldn't put it past somebody. So how do I say this? I mean, I'm using my hands here and everybody can see that. So Sean Renard had his associate set the booby trap in the car and the car to go off. What if, and our engineer will love this because it's another theory. What if an associate of the associate, like a double agent, double secret agent, clued in Eric and he slipped out, and even if there was a body,
right.
it was somebody else's body or something.
Right, right. So what purpose would he have other than self-preservation? Right.
Which is a pretty strong motive.
Yeah.
I think...
How would he play that to his drink?
Well, I think there's a lot of ways that could play out. One way that it could play out is because he could step back and maybe gain information about the alliances that are going on. His, I'm not sure if it's another brother or what, but the new prince is Victor. And I don't know what his relationship to Eric is.
Okay.
But he makes Eric seem almost childish.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen
he's
Victor.
He's like really mean.
Okay.
He's
wow.
Like vicious
he's
mean.
He's the uber devil.
I love it.
Well, so back when I first started watching this series, it was really just this season. And Adeline had killed a witch or taken something
yes.
from a witch. And so what's the purpose, if you know, of making this baby some kind of demon? I mean, so she's rubbing this stuff on her stomach. And where's that going?
Well, all of her whole reason, I believe, in getting herself impregnated was to use that as leverage to regain her Hex and Beast powers.
Okay, so those were taken away.
Mm-hmm, by Nick.
Okay.
Nick found a loophole and got her Hex and Beast powers from her, and he did that in order to save Hank, because she had Hank bewitched, if you will, with magic cookies and everything, and then there was this big showdown with Adeline and Nick found out that if any of a Grimm's blood got into her, I believe it was... then she would lose her Hex and Beast powers.
Oh.
And he has her pinned and bites her lip, or she, I don't know, one of them bit the other one, and yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was borderline like rape and sex, but it was just biting.
Okay.
But it was a very submissive, you know, empowering, violent pose. And
okay.
Yeah.
So the only way for her to get her powers back is to have this baby?
They don't really explain that.
Yeah.
That's never explained why she had to have a baby to get them back.
Right.
But I think she thought that if she conceived with
a royal baby.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was going to be a royal offspring, her child would be valuable enough that she could use that as leverage to get help in getting her Hex and Beast powers back.
Right.
Interestingly, the witch that she killed, she played both parts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was her in old age makeup.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So I'm not sure why she had to kill a witch or a Hex and Beast, but I'm not sure how Frau Peck got the short straw.
Right.
But there was actually a moment when the Gypsy Queen... and I can't remember her full character name, but she says to Frau Peck, better you than me.
Oh.
Yeah.
So it had to be just somebody.
Apparently it wasn't specifically Frau Peck, but it had to be a Hex and Beast that she had to kill.
Right.
And
right.
Yeah, and she had to go through this whole ceremony of burying the heart and the hands, and then it killed the field of poppies, or a large circle of poppies, and then she had to pick every single one of those dead poppies, insert them back into the body.
Wow, this is like a video game. You know? Go collecting these things now.
Without the multiplayer aspect.
Yeah, exactly. So they don't really explain a lot about that.
No. In fact, there's a lot of things that don't get explained. Why? There's so many whys. I mean, we could do a whole show on the whys.
The whys, yeah. Well, you think that now that they're in the third season, that you would know a little bit more about the royal family and what other royals there are out there. You said, are there like seven?
There's seven different houses? Families, or seven different royal houses, I think they call them. And we've only met one.
Okay.
So, Sean has repeatedly hinted that there are alliances being formed within the royal families. And he's working with the resistance for a couple of reasons. One, because he is the bastard son, and so he would not be a part of an alliance with one of the royal families. He would be excluded. And I think he has a real fear for the well-being of all of the Vessen world, except the royal families are not Vessen per se. They sort of rule over the Vessen world, if that... There's a lot of things that I can't really speak to specifically because it's not laid out specifically in any of the shows.
Right.
But there was recently an episode where Sean Renard was talking about if we don't stand up, if we don't make a stand, and we are then ruled by the royal families in general,
right,
we will be cowing down to them. We will be on the floor begging for the scraps.
Sure.
And Sean Renard is a really complicated character, much more so than, I'm going to take that back. They've actually done a good job of making most of the characters have multifacet. They're not a particularly shallow character.
Sure.
But he's like evolved. In the first season, he was definitely working against Nick. He was doing everything he could to bring Nick down. And then in the second season, he was like turned the tide and was working for Nick, and he was supporting him and he was protecting him. And now he's somewhere in between. Nick is his ace in his pocket that he has as a card to pull out in the resistance fighting against the royals. And at times he may be only slightly protective of Nick. And on the other hand, you never quite know. There's like, if it's... I always had the feeling that Sean had this grand scheme plan.
Yeah,
he had the whole chessboard.
Right.
And everybody is a part in his plan.
Mm-hmm.
We are not privy to that plan.
Right.
But somewhere he has laid out underneath his mattress his scrolls of what he thinks is going to happen and where he falls into this and how everybody is supposed to play their part.
Sure, it's a much bigger chess game.
Yes, yeah. Than we've seen.
Yeah.
And where exactly he sees Nick falling into that is not really clear.
Right. So now, are there other Grimms?
Yes.
Because I've only ever seen Nick. So.
Well, his mother is a Grimm.
Okay.
And his mother is alive and she's... Well, we don't really know where she is. Yeah, I think it was in season two, there were these gold coins of Xanthus, which change people, and they're highly prized, but they bring out the worst in people.
Hmm.
And the inference was that they were held by Hitler.
Okay.
And they were part of what fueled him.
They can bring out the ultimate corruption in somebody.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And make them... an almost like demigod leader.
Sure.
So his mother took the coins, and she was to sort of like going into the land of Mordor.
Okay, yeah. Throw them into the...
Casting them back into the fires from which they came. I think she was supposed to cast them into the volcano from which they had originally been forged.
Uh-huh.
But she hasn't been able to do that according to the emails that Nick and Juliet have gotten from
her. So that's the mysterious journey that she's on.
Yes.
Okay.
One of the mysterious journeys.
Oh, okay.
And even when we saw the last of her, she was supposed to have gotten on a train. Nick says goodbye to her. She walks around a corner like she was going to get on the train that he has bought a ticket for her. Nope. She comes back around. Slim Jim's a car.
So she wanted him to think she was gone.
Well, she's gone. But she didn't leave the same way that he thought she was.
Yeah.
I don't think she's in Portland.
Right.
I think she's gone, but definitely on her own terms.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a different kind of Grimm. She's like an old school Grimm.
So she still beheads Vessen?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what made Nick decide not to go that route?
I think the way that he was introduced to being a Grimm.
Okay.
You know, he sort of found out the hard way. His Aunt Marie was Grimm.
Okay.
And when she had cancer, she came to visit, and she was basically trying to pass on the baton to him. But she ends up getting basically killed before.
Okay.
I mean, she was attacked in the hospital, and then she eventually is killed in the hospital. So he gets it without any instructions, without any guidance, you know, this is what you are, this is the history, this is how what we do, this is why we do it, this is how we do it. No. Okay. He gets a trailer full of books and weapons.
Yeah.
And no how-to manual.
Interesting. So the audience then can learn along with him.
Yes.
Yeah. So
yeah. It's a good... Yeah, and season one was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough. I mean, his character was rough. A lot of things were rough.
Yeah.
They were getting a whole handle on the format and the style and...
Yeah. Well, I've heard you comment before, they introduced some concepts in the first season that they've never followed through on.
Storylines yeah. that just sort of started and then went nowhere. Even in the first episode, in the last shot of the first episode, we see what I think was a bloop bod.
Yeah.
As Juliet and Nick are leaving the grave site. Never saw that character again.
Huh.
You don't know who it was. Don't know why they were watching. If they were to report back to the royals or something that Aunt
right.
Marie was dead, never was followed up.
Yeah.
Just that they were being watched. By somebody in full Vessin. Yeah. And things like that happened all the time. You know, like all these storylines. It would start. There was the episode about the bees and the flash mob bees that would attack. And that was actually an episode when we got to see a lot more of Adeland because her lawyer in the law firm, her...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the colleague was killed in a flash mob, and not because she was a lawyer. She was killed because of work that they were doing, but we never really got to know what that was.
Okay.
But it had something to do with Sean Renard.
Okay, right.
And now Nick, who knows that Adeland is a hexen beast, has to actually protect her.
Right.
At the end of that episode, Nick ends up killing the queen of the bees.
Mm-hmm.
And she is warning Nick of some danger that is to come. Whether we have already seen that danger or not, I don't know.
Right.
Or if it was something else even larger looming that we've not yet seen. There's been, you know, there's a weekly danger for Nick. So
sure.
Was right. she talking about what came up the next week?
Yeah.
It didn't really seem appropriate for the kind of warning that she was giving him.
Gotcha.
So I'm not really sure what it was that she was warning him about.
Right.
It's a little hard to know, you know, because she died.
Indeed.
But Nick killed her in defense of Hank because she was, I guess, in danger of killing Hank.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that has bothered a lot of people about this show is the strange set of morals and values that are presented.
Kind of a double standard.
Oh, at least double.
Yeah.
I mean, if Nick doesn't seem to have a lot of remorse when he has killed Vessin in the line of duty or protecting. In fact, there have been times when he has literally set out to kill.
Uh-huh.
But
well,
then...
Well, he is a Grimm.
He is a Grimm, yeah. But then the one time that he killed somebody that wasn't Vessin in the bar scene after when he was in his zombie throes of the zombie virus or whatever mm-hmm. they called it, that one tortured him. And Sean Renard even called him out on it. He said, are you bothered about this because you killed somebody or are you bothered because you killed somebody who wasn't Vessin? And
right.
I thought that was fair.
Sure.
And I had a, because I've been doing recaps of this since it first aired. Early on, I think it was in season one, I had somebody complain about the double standard
mm-hmm.
in their morality and their ethics. And I don't know that person came back to watch more episodes
right.
because they were that much bothered
right.
by the lack of remorse over deaths when they are Vessin.
Well, there sort of are two sorts of rules here, two
yes.
sets. So there's the Vessin rules, and that's their inherent nature.
Yes.
The Grimm does kill Vessin, and they do so because of certain reasons.
Usually in the name of protecting others. I mean,
right.
in Nick's world.
Right.
Yeah.
And so then in our reality, you know, you've got a policeman protecting the public, right?
The Vesson public.
She's laughing.
Yeah. Well, it's a little bit, you know.
It's all intermingled now. So where do you draw that line? Where
I don't know.
You know. There's no black and white. It's all shades of gray, to quote a phrase. Mm-hmm. But it's true. Yeah, there's no black or white sometimes in a decision.
Well,
there's varying degrees of what's right and wrong.
And we all face that in our everyday world. Yeah. But as a police officer, you're supposed to abide by certain rules.
Yes. And they seem to be breaking those a lot.
Yeah. He tends to disregard them.
Right.
Whenever it's convenient.
Well, relative to Vesson, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of rules and police work and all, they also, I haven't found a consistency on like when they follow certain police procedures and when they don't. Even down to when they wear gloves for handling evidence.
Oh, yeah.
Like sometimes they take care to put on the gloves before they touch something. And other times, no. Pick up the victim's phone. Go through it.
Uh-huh.
Wait a minute.
Right.
Isn't that evidence? And didn't you just plant your big greasy fingerprints all over that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of those things that kind of bothers me. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's at least decide what police procedures are in your show, in this world.
And just be consistent.
And follow them.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily, they don't have to follow real police procedures. But yeah, they should be consistent within their own world.
Right.
That's something that
I agree. I'm kind of a CSI, NCIS fan, so pretty picky about disturbing evidence like that.
And they do it on a regular basis. Pretty regular anyway.
Yeah.
They'll take things up and all.
Well, in our ladies' lounge chat earlier, you had mentioned that Monroe used to be kind of the comedic person, and then he was sort of replaced by Sergeant Wu as Monroe kind of settled down into a domestic life. So I've just started watching this in the third season, and Monroe to me seems kind of a bland character. So where do you think that's going to go?
I hope that they're going to give him back some fire. I mean, he's had episodes where he dealt with his whole bloop bod self and went off on little rampages with an ex-girlfriend, and that was exciting.
Yeah.
But in the first episode, one of the things that immediately endeared him to me was the scene where he is driving in his little Volkswagen Bug in the forest with Nick, and he's sticking his head out the window to sniff the trail.
Oh, right.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It was just so much fun because he had this, it was like total abandonment. You know, he's slowly driving along and being his blue bud self, sticking his nose out the window, just like a dog.
Right.
Sniffing his way. Right. And then they're like going through a creek to take away the scent because they're approaching a blue bud's cabin. So they've got to be careful about scent. And Nick is totally oblivious. And he's like, well, why are we doubling back this way and everything? And Monroe's like, you want to just like come and shout in his yard? You know?
Yeah.
You have to approach with respect. You can't just encroach. And yes, Monroe has lost some of those parts of him, of his character.
Right, right.
And definitely lost some of the comedic and the one-liners and the comic relief. And in several of the last episodes, we've not had much comic relief at all. Not from Sergeant Wu, not from anybody. It's been much more a straight show.
Sure.
And much more heavy.
There's they're dealing with more issues now that I think that I see them progressing. And this last episode, for example, where they deal with the prejudice with Monroe's parents, right?
Right.
And that was a very interesting cliffhanger at the end there.
Take on the whole prejudice card.
Right.
And interestingly enough, last week when it was introduced and we got to see Monroe meeting Rosalie's family and they're sitting down to a very tense dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And Rosalie's sister, Dana, I think her name is Dana, Dina or Dana, asks a very pointed question of Monroe about Bloompot's being able to have the patience to work on clocks. And Rosalie looks at her and says, really? You're going to play the Vesson card? And now when she gets to meet his parents, it's even more.
Right. It's extremely pronounced.
I mean, it's not even a Russian card. It's like the whole freaking deck being thrown at her. It's,
right.
Yeah. It was even more intense than, because when meeting her family, it wasn't so much about them as it was about Rosalie's history with her own mother and sister.
Okay.
Rather than the shock of their relationship,
mm-hmm.
Monroe and Rosalie's relationship. It was more about Rosalie reconnecting and resolving, or not resolving, but facing mm-hmm. her estranged relationship with her family.
I see.
But for Rosalie meeting Monroe's parents, wow, that was...
I thought it was an extreme reaction to a mixed marriage, so to speak. And I
yes.
didn't know that mixed marriages existed between Vess and... You know, we've just seen Juliet's friend.
Yes.
Who was a victim of domestic abuse, right?
Yes.
And that was a mixed yes. marriage.
Yeah. Fuchsba and something that looked like a badger.
Right, right. And so I just assumed that it was kind of a normal thing for mixed marriages to occur. And so for them to be so conservative in their approach, maybe that's just an extreme version.
Well, no, I think traditionally, at least according to the way they portrayed mm-hmm. it, is more the norm.
Okay.
But you have some mixed marriages
yeah.
in the Vessin world.
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird way of saying it. But yeah, it seems, I mean, I'm speaking, you know, as a very knowledgeable person who's simply just watching the show. I'm not one of the writers or...
yeah, but you've seen these episodes several times as you write your recaps.
Yes.
And you kind of pick them apart in a way that most of us don't as consumers, so...
Yeah, that's true. But I don't get to be the fly on the wall in the meetings, the
right.
production meetings, and get to know what their backstory is and how they've... the thought that's gone into creating this world.
Yeah.
I simply pick apart the product.
Right.
So I get to, like... It's like seeing the recipe and picking apart the muffin afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
It's kind of the difference in
yeah.
how it is. But the there's also been, I think there was an episode, I'm not sure that the husband was actually Vessin, though. But the wife was a spider type.
Mm.
It was a really gross...
That would be kind of creepy.
It was gross. She,
yeah,
she dissolved her... Sort of a Black Widow thing.
Ooh.
Yeah. It was...
And you said you weren't afraid of spiders.
Well, I'm, you know...
Okay, creep value and fear is two different things, right?
Most of the spiders that I encounter are not human size.
That's true.
You know, most of them are pretty small
yes.
and yeah.
Yeah.
If necessary, I can get them out of the house or, you know, worst case scenario, I dispatch of them.
Sure.
But
in a quick and painless way.
Or hopefully painless.
Hopefully painless.
Yeah.
At least it's quick.
Yeah. It's painless for me.
So you and I have talked a lot about some of the, spouses or significant others, and you've mentioned Juliet a few times. Like
mm-hmm.
There's more than meets the eye there.
I think there is.
Yeah.
That hasn't been spelled out.
Right.
But
she talked a little bit about it with her friend who came to stay and escape that domestic abuse situation.
Mm-hmm.
And she said something about having been aware.
Well, she wasn't aware the whole time that they've known each other, she didn't know that she was Vessin. She was genuinely surprised
okay.
when Nick informed her that her friend, Allison
yeah.
was a Vessin. But in the real world, Juliet has gone through things that I cannot imagine being able to deal with it with the same sort of, the same sort of chutzpah.
Yeah.
I'm trying to edit my language here.
Yeah.
That she has. I mean, she's taken on, there was an ogre that broke into their house and she scalded it with water and got away from it. And she has never been the screaming, running for her life kind of character.
But she kept her head on and used what was there.
Yes. Yeah. And she was abducted by the Dämonenführer and the dragon Wesen. And in the end was able to get herself loose and battle the female dragon Wesen and get away with the help of Monroe. But and at that point, she didn't know that Monroe was Wesen, so that was a little awkward, that whole... Yeah. Mm-hmm. And she didn't know that Nick was a Grimm. And,
okay. Yeah. But she seems to be embracing all this stuff pretty... Like, it's just she takes it in stride, right?
Yeah, and that might be kind of a flaw of the show. Both Hank... She and Hank.
Yeah.
Who are... I'm not even going to try to say the word. One that knows but isn't Wesen.
Mm-hmm.
That knows about Wesen but isn't, that there's a German word that they made up, but it's way too hard for me to pronounce.
Okay.
Anyway, they just take it in stride. Hank, I think, had to because he was going crazy.
Right.
And he was, you know, he was about to be committed to the round rubber room.
Okay. So it was the only way for him, actually things to make sense, is for him to embrace the truth.
Yes.
Yeah.
Once he knew it's, I mean, he will say that he wasn't comfortable with it, but he's learning to deal with it.
Right.
And I think maybe that's the same thing with Juliet. I mean, she had already had to deal with people attacking in the house and things going weird and her whole being in the coma and all of that. So maybe embracing it was her only way of really dealing with it.
Yeah.
But they... From a real world standpoint, man, they accept these things really easily. I'm not sure that, you know, if I came to my husband and said, honey, I have something to share with you. You know, every full moon when I'm gone for a short period of time. Yeah.
There's a reason for that.
Yeah. You know, the stains in the sheets. I'm sorry about that. I don't think he would be as...
You don't think he'd be okay with that?
No. Not only would he not be as okay, I think it might put him off the deep end. You know? I'm sorry, this is grounds for a divorce.
Yeah. Or he might scratch his head and say, well, that explains a whole lot. Yeah. I thought it was just me.
And that's the route that they've both taken is, you know, yep. Oh, okay, well, now I have an understanding and
right.
and a guideline or a basis for what's been going on and why I've been put in danger. And
yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
So the physical therapist that Hank was seeing, so you and I kind of disagree on this. I think they'll bring her back and you think that she left on her own terms.
Oh, I think she did leave on her own terms, but I agree. I actually agree with you that they may bring her back, but I don't think it's going to be right away.
Yeah.
I think it might not be until next season.
Oh, gotcha.
Just because they've got so many other storylines to, well, they won't wrap them up for this season, but sure. They're going to come to a head where we have some sort of cliffhanger, of mm-hmm. course, and there's enough going on here to get to the end of this.
Right, the end of the season.
Oh my gosh, I just realized... Adeline, poor Adeline, is probably not going to deliver this baby until next season.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think that's going to happen this season. I think that will be the cliffhanger.
Oh, poor lady.
But it might be good for her, too, because as Sean Renard pointed out, once you have the baby, your value goes way down.
Yeah.
So, although, that's a good question, though, is this baby is either Eric's or his, right?
Right.
And
we think. I mean, we haven't seen anybody else.
Does anybody else know that it could possibly be Sean Renard's?
Yes, Victor has just figured out.
Okay. So if the baby is Sean Renard's, mm-hmm. would it have a different value because he's a bastard son of the royal family?
Well, even Victor stated that even if it is Sean Renard's, it is still of royal birth.
Okay.
So apparently being from a bastard son doesn't make it less valuable. Yeah. It doesn't go on the clearance rack quite yet.
Are these babies kind of rare? Or is,
I don't know.
Does nobody else in the family ever have kids? I'm just wondering.
No sex for you.
Yes, right. Yeah, I mean, it just seems like it's like the baby. It's the only baby.
I know, which is kind of weird. There's seven houses. Like, right. Nobody's getting it on anywhere.
Exactly.
But we haven't seen
people
or
need
heard.
To loosen up a little bit, don't they?
Loosen up that tie.
That's right.
I don't know. We haven't seen anything from the other houses. So maybe they're full of babies. Maybe it's just this one family that needs this baby to continue the line.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
Let's wait for the prophecy to come out. Some prophecy.
Well, you saw the whole hands and the head, and then it becomes a skeleton head. And Maggie, my daughter, said, "What is this? Why is it a demon baby?"
Because she keeps rubbing that stuff on her stomach.
And it makes all these demonic, skull and the, what all were the different images? I can't remember the different images. I know there was a skull and there was like a spider. There was a spider image and I think a skull and the crossbones image or something.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I just realized that she's not going to get to deliver this baby this season.
Probably not.
No.
I think it'll just torture her for a while. But I agree with you. That storyline itself is going on pretty slowly. And it does tend to lose the audience's attention because it's just not, there's not enough backstory to make it interesting anymore.
Yeah. There's been too much secrecy. There's also something else that may come, I just realized the Vessin Council has one of their associates watching Nick.
Ah.
He doesn't know it, and we haven't seen him now in several episodes. But somewhere, he's in the wings watching Nick. Mm-hmm. And now that we have a hunter who has set his sights on Nick, I wonder if this associate from the Vessin Council will make an appearance to keep Nick safe.
Mm.
I mean, it's in their best interest, and it's part of them maintaining the balance to keep Nick alive.
Okay.
Yeah. And there were some assassins that were killing off Grimms in a previous episode, like season two. Uh-huh. So how many?
So they haven't come back yet.
No, he killed them.
Okay. Pretty efficient that way.
He killed them, beheaded them, and sent their heads back.
Oh, lovely.
Mm-hmm. Nice little care package.
So now, they haven't really talked much lately about some of his heightened senses.
I know.
Since his zombie thing. I mean, they were kind of playing that up every week for a while.
Well, and not just the zombie thing, but there was an episode in season two where he got the Sandman dust in his eyes or venom or something in his eyes.
Oh, right. He had
the bandages. Blind for a while, and then afterwards he had a heightened sense of, I guess, hearing, but he was out doing fruit chopping practice out in the woods with Monroe.
Yeah.
And he was very good.
Yeah. Right. Almost like he knew where it was going to be before it was there.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Like an extrasensory type perception thing. And now with the zombie powers, he's got all kinds of extra arsenals, extra little quivers in his bows in his quiver. No, arrows in his quiver.
It's like a super grim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, I like that.
I do too.
SG.
SG.
I need to contact the actor. Hey, you're an SG.
Give a shout out.
Yeah. So you want to, I think this will air before Valentine's. Mm-hmm. You want to, is there anybody on Grimm that you would like to send a Valentine's to?
Oh, it's got to be Nick.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Yeah. And pray tell, explain.
Well, you know, of course, he's cute. Yes, he is. He's cute. He's a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
I think that
he's gotten smarter as the show's gone on.
Yeah, and I didn't get to see him in the first season or
anything. Well, that's good, because that might have ruined it for you.
But, you know, I think that overall, I think he's got, besides the double standard, you know, killing or not killing kind of thing, I think that he's got a good handle on Grimms don't have to kill every Vessin. Not every Vessin is evil.
Right.
And that's what I like about him, is that he's decided not to be prejudiced by the past.
Yes. And he makes a judgment on each one.
Exactly.
Yeah. That is. Okay. So nice.
Yeah.
So nice little heart out to Nick.
Nick.
Mm-hmm. Nick Burkhart.
How about you? I think I know yours.
Yeah. Mine goes to Monroe.
Yeah.
And I would like Monroe to have some more of the humor that he had in the beginning of the show.
Yeah.
I'd like to bring that back. I would like them to have more humor. Because I don't want to take away from Sergeant Wu.
Right.
He's a great one-liner guy.
Yeah.
I don't know what he does, bribe the writers or something to get those one-liners? I'm not sure. But he has some great one-liners. Mm-hmm. But Monroe had that in the beginning. And he had more of this curiosity. And, I mean, one of the things that we love about Monroe is his zest for life, his exuberance, like his thing with Christmas.
Yeah.
I mean, he just loves it.
Over
the
top.
He throws himself into it, just goes all out. Yeah. Same thing with Halloween, you know? His house is the one to go to on your trick-or-treating route because he is going to do it right.
Right.
And then the other thing that I would like to say about Valentine's is I would like to send out a special message to Bud. Bud was supposed to be a one-off. He was supposed to come, do his one episode, and that was it. And the audiences loved him so much that he's been brought back as a returning character.
Uh-huh.
And I just think that Grimm, the show, needs to invite me on set. I need to be there. I need to come and see what I'm reporting on, what I'm reviewing and recapping. I really need to, you know, like get my hands into it and understand
Dig into the soft underbelly of Grimm.
Exactly.
Yep,
and be that little fly on the wall and know what the backstory is.
You
and just think how much more in-depth my reviews could be. I could know what the world is all about. And, you know, since I'd be there, it would be a great time to cast me as Bud's wife.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Now tell me, what would that look like?
Well, because, you know, I've got my curly hair, and I think I've got a bit of a beaverish look, you know?
So the beaver vessel.
Yeah. Yes. I think I could definitely pull that off.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Kind of the domestic beaver vessel.
Yeah.
It's you.
Totally. I bake. I can sew. So, Grimm doesn't come back until February 28th, following the Olympics, the Winter Olympics. And my guess is that there's going to be at least another short break in there somewhere, and they'll probably wind up in May. We've got a whole lot of storylines to, okay, not tie up, but bring to some sort of cliffhanger before the end of the season. And golly, it should be a really fun ride to get there. I'm sorry for Adeland, man.
Yeah, this sucks to be her.
It does, because
now just be careful what you ask for, right?
Yeah, her pregnancy of 6 months is going to get drug out for another several months.
That's right. In a very painful way.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us here at Sci-Fi for Chicks. Don't forget, you can find us in several different social media formats. You can subscribe, follow, like, and share. We're on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and Pinterest. Just look for that Sci-Fi for Me. You can also find us on iTunes and DoubleTwist. And through the RSS feed on our main site, scififorme.com. If you want to chime in, you can send us feedback. You can ask a question. scififorchicks@scififorme.com. Or you can call us. We have our secret super hotline. That number is 573-42 Sci-Fi, because sci-fi is the name, and 42 is the answer to all questions. I'm Maya Aides, and
I'm Cami Settle.
This has been Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Remember, no matter where you go, there you are. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.